Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
Hello and welcome to the Magic Week in Review, bringing you news, rumor, and culture reports from the front lines of the magic industry. I'm Justin Robert Young, editor of iTricks.com, and in this edition of the program, we are going to be talking to one of the most exciting young mentalists out of the UK. Yeah. He has been on the show before, and we're really excited to have him back. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Cox, welcome back to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me back. It is always a pleasure.
Oh, man. We'll get into everything that Chris is up to, including a new London show and another run in Edinburgh. But first, let me remind you guys that this episode of the Magic Week in Review is brought to you by Peter Lawfren's Shockwave, a professional self-contained PK animator board. Listen, folks, you can create shocking visual PK effects, animations, and more seemingly with just your brainwaves. Check this out. No electronics, no threads, no PK rings, 100% self-contained, lightweight, always under your control. You could perform it buck naked if you wanted, and the possibilities are endless. Do me a favor. Go on over to, I'll have the specific URL here, masterofillusions.ca/store-shockwave.html, or you can just head on over to iTricks and search for Shockwave. You can find all the details there, but please check it out and check out the demo video. Seeing is believing, folks. Shockwave comes to you complete with a professional handcrafted board, accessories, and instructions with a load of simple routine ideas to get you started. Pick it up. Peter Lawfren's Shockwave. Can't pronounce that name. It's
a tough one.
Yeah, Lawfren. I'm a marble mouth today, but the effect is great, and the video is fantastic. So everybody, check it out.
I like the idea of someone now doing it butt naked because you've suggested that.
Of course, I'll tell you what. And that's what Peter writes here in his.
I never want to see that act.
No.
Well, do I want to see it?
I mean, you know, you could think of some female performers for which it would be better
I'd
than others.
That.
Yeah, you know. It's like, oh, well, you certainly are proving that technique, miss. That is a definite proving element. Chris, all right, the last time that we talked to you, I guess it was around, I don't know if it was a year ago this time or maybe 2 years ago, but I think you were just gearing up for Edinburgh. And, how many years have you done that now?
So I've done four, and last year I took a year off, so last year would have been my fifth year, so I'm going to do it this year, which is my fifth show, but sixth year, if that makes sense.
Why do you want to take a year off?
I kind of got to the stage where last time I did it, 2009, I enjoyed the show. The show was great, the reviews were great, which is always lovely, but I had a time of it, and just didn't particularly enjoy it, and thought, well, you know what, I'm going to take a year off. I took the show to New Zealand and Australia to tour it there last year, mm-hmm. and kind of felt, if I'm going to do that, I'm not going to be back in the UK till later in the year, and it's not enough time to do it properly. So I thought, year off, relax, enjoy it, and then come back this year with something new and different, and just take that time to, I'd have done 4 hours of material of new shows, and sort of take a year off and get some new stuff together.
When you're doing stuff, because obviously there's a lot of repeat audience for Edinburgh year on year, that people really enjoy that scene and they like to see, you know, people coming out there. But it seems like it's a very unique challenge because you have those same people that want to come to the show, but also it is a festival of creativity. You know, you can't really show up with the same act year after year after year without kind of getting a reputation for, well, that guy didn't come up with anything new, just the same old stock crap.
Exactly. I've never done... Every show has been completely new. There's never been a trick which has been the same throughout, which is just, it's the first kind of 2 years, I suppose I did my versions of the classics. So I took classic principles and reinterpreted them myself. And the last two have been all my own, pretty much, in terms of idea for trick, story for show, narrative, and method. It's all been me. And it takes 9 months to a year to come up with a full, strong hour of material to do that with. It kills you.
But it would seem like it's a different kind of show, and correct me if I'm wrong, than, let's say, what you're going to do in London, right? Because, you know, that might be a bit of a different crowd where, you know, Edinburgh, you're trying to go, you know, the extra mile. Like almost you can be, obtuse, you know, and it's going to be valued because, like, wow, that's way out there. That's pretty cool. Whereas London, I mean, it's kind of a more regular, like, hey, look, I mean, this is a magic guy kind of show, right?
Exactly. I think Edinburgh, you've got the license to do something slightly differently and to to try and experiment a bit, and kind of the London show's in a big theatre, and it's I'm doing Mind Over Patter, which was my 2009 Edinburgh show, but the kind of the London version, which is the version that I've now toured, and it's got to the best it is, and I'll throw in some old effects. So it's kind of a best of. It's a showcase show where you kind of you do your good stuff, you build a narrative, you make a good show out of it. Where Edinburgh, you can take a few more risks, but yeah. Just at the end of the day, do a show which is going to get people in, because a month of no one in is no fun.
No, that would seem like a long, slow, painful death that nobody wants to suffer.
And an expensive one as well. People often go, why don't many magicians do it? And it's because it costs a fortune. It costs like...
Really? How does that work? Like, so it, just in terms of you being out there, or you booking your own place?
It's all... like my first 2 years, I did it all myself. I promoted myself. So you pay for the venue hire. You then give the venue 40% of your box office.
Jeez.
You then hire somewhere to live. And bearing in mind, the population of Edinburgh more than doubles during August.
Yeah.
So £2,000 for a flat. That would normally be £600.
Yeah.
Flyers, posters, flyerers, the actual cost of a show, anyone working on the show, it all mounts up. And then the last 2 years I've had a promoter, so they do all that for me, but it all costs. So like this week I've been meeting people about doing PR and doing photos and poster design. So it ends up, as a rule, most acts in Edinburgh lose around £7,000.
Wow.
So if you're breaking even, you're doing a good job. And last year I made a little bit. And you're like, wow, I've made money from this. Who'd have thought you can make money doing what you love?
What a novel concept. Well, you know, if you don't mind me asking, like, how much, you know, ballpark, you know, did you wind up shelling out when you were doing it all by yourself?
So as a good example, the last show, Mind Over Patter, I sold £28,000 worth of tickets over a month.
Okay.
What was
the size of your venue?
So it was 198 seater.
Okay.
And you do the show every night. So some nights you sell out, some nights it's a rainy Tuesday and you get 70 in.
Yeah.
And from that I got about just around £2,000 back. That was my profit in it.
Wow.
So it's about £26,000 it costs.
And that's all, you know, living expenses, eating there, you know.
Eating, the cost to put the show on, the cost. Yeah. Taken off by the venue, by the promoters, by everything. But the way I look at it, and I think most people do, is it's A, it's a great fun month. B, you get a good show out of it if you do well. And then it's kind of a trade show. Edinburgh's the trade show.
Yeah.
So we go perform. I got booked last year to go to New Zealand, so got to take the show there. And you just work in that respect. But
it would seem like, you know, nobody would want to go there unless, you know, there was work, you know, the promise of more work on the back end of it, right? You know, exactly. As long as you did well. I mean, I'm sure if you just blew, then it'd be terrible.
Then it's no fun.
Yeah.
And also, creatively, it just makes you work harder, because you go, right, I need a whole new hour. Boom. This is my deadline. You've got to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it really is a fascinating thing. In terms of you taking, like, Mind Over Patter specifically from Edinburgh to on the road and now to London, you know, what kind of stuff did you wind up taking out? Like, how did the show evolve, let's say, from when it first debuted in Edinburgh to what you're going to be performing in London?
I think the basic evolution comes from just the more you do it, the more you know the show, so the less you think about the show, but think about the little subtleties and the nuances and the extra jokes, and it allows you to have more fun with your audience.
Yeah.
So that side of it is better, just because the show's there. You start, you get to the end, you don't really think about what you're doing. I changed my first trick. That changed after Edinburgh when I started touring it, which was originally a thing with iTunes, which kind of worked in Edinburgh. It was an effect where someone would think of a song, I'd have an iTunes playlist completely all untitled. They'd check it was real. They'd check everything went through the speakers. They'd pick one. They'd play it. It would be their song.
Gotcha.
But I kind of felt when I taught in Edinburgh, people kind of know, they sort of know who I am, and the publicity around the show means as they're coming in, they should know roughly what to expect.
Yeah.
When you're touring or doing single nights, people don't know that so much. So I dropped that trick and put in kind of an old favorite, which helps set me up as a performer more.
Gotcha. So that opening, if they don't know your, you know, they know what mentalism is. I mean, if they just see like magician Chris Cox and they're like, well, is he going to pull a tiger or, you know, is he going to do a card trick? Then that's a little bit too, you know, taking too much for granted if you do an iTunes you know, trick like that. Yeah,
exactly. And this way it kind of shows people what I do, roughly how I do it, my character. It sort of puts them in the space for the show, which is really useful. And then other things like the lots of a script changed, it became tighter, the theme became more coherent, my big ending sort of, just little things like originally in Edinburgh, I'd have people write stuff down on a flip chart throughout, and then that would stay on stage at the end as I played a video, which kind of matched stuff up.
Yeah.
And I got rid of that for the tour and kept the people on stage, and they'd write it on their own pads and reveal it when it matched up. And I just think kind of dramatically it made more sense and was more, I think it just punched those more amazing impact moments better.
Our other sponsor on this show, TrickShotMagic.com, folks. TrickShotMagic is your one and only place to go buy all the magic you can possibly think of. They have their lowest prices they've ever had, and their live chat feature is something that you don't want to miss. Make sure you don't end up with a product that you don't want in your digital shopping cart and in your hands. They're not going to try and sell you stuff to sell you stuff. They're going to sell you stuff for your act. Folks, check them out, TrickShotMagic.com. Tell them I Trick sent you so Sam isn't wasting his money on this podcast. Now, do you think that there's a value to kind of going through that process? Like, let's say if you do, you know, your Edinburgh show are you, when you perform in Edinburgh, are you trying to make a show that you could tour as is, across the world or around the country, you know? Or is it something where like let me try to throw a bunch of stuff against the wall? I mean, I know it's all good. I know it all works. I can make a coherent show. It's not like you're putting in half-baked stuff, but, you know, I can take a few more, risks that if, let's say, you were performing, you know, and in New Zealand for the first time, you might not, because, you know, if it hits in Edinburgh, then it's like, oh, well, maybe I can move in this direction a little bit.
Exactly. I think what it is I, in the back of my head, I have the idea that I want to be able to tour that show. So in the UK, as a rule, if I tour it, it'll be two acts. So although I'm creating an hour for Edinburgh, I'm thinking, how can I split this into two 45-minute halves? What do I need to add? And it is when you start in Edinburgh and the previews you do before, it is that chance to throw stuff around and see what sticks and hope that by the time you're kind of into your Edinburgh run, it's all working together.
Yeah.
So by the time you tour it, in essence, you just take that show and you do it, and you've then got the opportunity to start adding new stuff into a show that already works. And hopefully that process then helps you start your next show.
Yeah, I think that there's a tendency amongst, all performers, but magicians specifically, that, you know, they try to almost like win the war on paper, you know, the plan, especially because, obviously the effect is something that is, 90% of it kind of goes into, the method itself, working in the preparation stage and the conception stage and everything. There's so much work that goes into there that I think sometimes everything else that goes around it in terms of the presentation, like you said, the script tends to, become more important than it might be for, let's say, a singer or something like that, where, you know, you can work it in a little bit more on stage. You need a, feel of how this feels on stage, not just in how you write it and how you perform it in front of a mirror, but when you're up there and there's a crowd and there's a different, time dynamic, how it gets into shape for that. Do you think, with the process of spending so much time with a show while at the same time keeping your eye on creating new content, that, is that in the forefront of your mind, trying to work stuff, or make it tighter on the road to be constantly evolving stuff?
Yeah, in some respects, I suppose the thing I think you just do naturally by the more you do it, the better you get. It's like anything. So it's not, I'm always trying to, every night I want the show to be, I've got my aim with the show is that I have a script that doesn't feel too much like a script, so that the thought is, if I'm ill, I can go out and do the basic show and it'll be a good show. And the better I am that night, the more that gets fed into the stuff. And it's kind of, in fact, most of the kind of the script bits and the funny stuff and kind of the cutting happens naturally. And you record the show, you play it back and you go, oh, I dropped that whole section.
Yeah.
And paraphrased it to a sentence. And that actually sells the trick better because it doesn't need this big setup. And I think you just learn, I suppose it's you learn with the rhythm of the audience being there, and you can have a show on paper, but it's not until you first get out in front of an audience you know whether it's really going to work and if stuff's in the right place and what the rhythm feels like. So you have to experiment moving those things around.
Is there a danger, and this is something that I've also kind of noticed, that there's almost like a thought of, you know, like failure if it didn't work on that first draft. That, like, you know, if even if you're going in a better direction, at the end of the day, you have a better product, that it's like, ah, well, you know, I should have seen that. You know, you know, is that, because to me, I don't know. And you know, if you disagree with me, speak up. But like, I kind of see that as almost like the enemy of progress. You know, if you're too committed to what you've initially set out to do.
Yeah, I agree. I think you have to, the way I do it is, you know, there's stuff in previews that gets dropped for a couple of reasons, be it the show's too long or it's just not working or it's not getting the, in my head, what I thought would be the response it wasn't getting. But I always work, I always make sure I have people in that I trust at previews and in rehearsals giving those notes, because you get so tied up in your material and you're so close to it, you can't sometimes see that bigger picture as to actually, you, like you're saying, you're hindering your own process or progress by wanting that trick to succeed, where actually it's better just to drop it or rework it, or you kind of, and it's, I think it's really difficult. I think the best advice I've ever been given is get a director in, and even whether it's just a friend or a director or someone that can look at it, and you get so close to your stuff, you can't, when you know the method inside out, you can't then look bigger upon that. Or when you know your script inside out, you can often miss points for nice callbacks or bits where you can enhance a trick by just rewording some stuff here and there, or how stuff fits together without you ever noticing it.
Yeah. Well, that is, you know, I'll tell you, I always like talking about the creative process, especially people who are kind of out there, you know, doing it as much as you are. You've done a lot of TV spots lately. I know we just we posted a few things. You know, what is your philosophy on that? On you know, either cannibalizing stuff from your show on there, or do you want to come up with new material? What is your philosophy there?
It's a tough one because it's the double-edged sword of TV. You want to do it because it means bigger exposure, which means more people will come and see you. But you don't want to do the stuff you're going to do in your show because you want the element, the best element of a trick is the surprise of what's suddenly going to happen.
Yeah.
People have seen that before. It loses that. So I try to, like, the most recent TV bits I've done, I did the big TV show in New Zealand in this massive 4,000-seater theatre and did a trick, which was from a show, Everything Happens for a Reason. So that was my second show. Mm-hmm. And that's in my stand-up comedy club cabaret set. And it's a piece that I do all the time.
Yeah.
A recent thing I did on BBC Two was a chair routine, which was in my 2008 show Control Freak. Okay. Yeah. So it's kind of things I've not retired, because I've not retired them. I use them in sets and tricks still. I will bring it out every now and again, but they're not, if people are going to come see my show, they're not going to see that trick as a rule.
Yeah.
So to try and keep that element of surprise, but equally you want to do your most impressive and stuff, and the stuff, and often the thing I wanted to do for a TV show recently, we filmed and it looked good, but it wasn't as impactful as it is on stage. And I kept it as a stage piece, so we used the other trick instead, which I think, you kind of, some stuff you think, well, there's such a different beast, that TV audio stage thing. Because you've got, within the TV, say you've got 4 minutes, you've got to set up who you are, set up your trick, do the trick, make it impressive, and make it clear to follow.
Yeah.
Some stage stuff just doesn't work that, in particular with mentalism, some of it just needs so much setup to explain why it's going to be impressive. By the time you get there, people have lost interest.
Yeah, you know, it always kind of struck me as odd that when you are in front of a television audience, you know, more people are probably going to watch you there than are going to come see your show. You know, that, like, why people, you know, almost, and I guess, you know, that's the pull from what you were saying, is you don't want to do something, you don't want to do, like, the best, you don't want to do the best bit of your show, because especially if they like you, they're going to come see your show, hopefully. And, you know, then all of a sudden you don't have an ending for them, or it's going to be, you know, on a meh sort of note. But at the same time, you know, is there ever any curiosity to come up with something, you know, new or original that you haven't done on a show to kind of, that's, you know, a big sort of TV effect? Because, like you said, it's kind of in a different language than the stage stuff.
Yeah, I think, at the back of your mind, there's always that thought of, oh, I'm doing a TV show, I want to do something special for them. And then you kind of quickly find out the budget constraints or the time constraints, and you sort of in my head, I go, you know what? I'd prefer to go and slightly rework a trick that I know works and I know is impressive. So all those worries about it not working are gone. And it's a trick I've, by doing it, having done 100 times, you've rehearsed it 100 times. I think depending on the show, depends on what you create. At the minute, there's I'm working on developing a show for an American channel.
Yeah.
And that's really exciting because it's such a different medium to stage. So it's taking the stuff I know works on stage and ramming that to a TV format and making that work on screen. I think that's, they're such different disciplines, but in at the end of the day, your end result's the same. You want to entertain and you want to amaze.
Yeah.
Just have to work out how to do that.
Can you say which American channel you're working with?
Or is I'd love to, but I can't.
Well, because, I had to ask.
See, I would, but so, Little Old England, when I do stuff, I've got my promoter and we've never signed a contract.
Sure.
And we just kind of all do stuff. It's like, yeah, there's your money. Great, fine. As soon as I got this American deal, it's lawyers, like 3 different lawyers, a manager, an agent, this person, that person, and suddenly you go, "Oh, my life's not mine anymore."
No. It's a machine, and once you're in it, you know.
And it takes forever. I signed this deal a year ago. I came back from New Zealand and signed it, so it's just under a year ago. We're still in pre-production of making it work, and it's nice to have that, but also that element of you've lost control means you can't just go, right, come on, let's do this.
All right, let's go. Come on.
I'm ready.
Knock it off, people.
Bloke's packed. I've got a Sharpie. Let's go.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get the details on both your London show and your Edinburgh show. Let's start with the London one. Where can people get more information, and what can they expect?
So, as always, the best place is magiccox.com. It's Cox like the apple, not the other way. That's a very different website.
No, yes.
So it's magiccox.com, and it's the Udder Belly, which is the amazing upside-down purple cow, which has a theatre inside it, which will be on the South Bank in London as part of the South Bank Centre. And that's on the 12th of May at 9 p.m.
Okay.
So that'll be fun. And then Edinburgh will be, I think Edinburgh probably goes on sale June time, but I'll be playing the Pleasants at 7:10 in the afternoon or evening. That's evening. So yeah, at 7:10 in the evening. It doesn't have a name yet, but it'll be called Chris Cox and then some words.
Clever, I'm sure.
Yeah, something clever. So yeah, Mind Over Patter, London. That'll be the last time doing it there. And then hopefully I'll be able to bring that show to America later this year. I'll do a couple of LA and New York dates on that.
Oh, fantastic.
That's the hope. If the props still fit in the box and can get on a plane, I'll bring it over.
There we go. I'll tell you what. You have to come back on when you come back to America so we can tell people to go see it then. And then in general, so Magic Cox is where people can find you. Are you on Twitter, Facebook?
Yeah. Twitter.com/BigCox and Facebook.com/ILoveCox. Basically, what I've done is I found a pun and I've gone with it.
I'll tell you what. As soon as we get done recording, you'll have to explain it to me because it's right over my head. All right, folks. Well, that about wraps it up for this edition of the Magic Week in Review. And until next time, I'm Justin Robert Young, editor of iTricks.com, Justin R. Young on Twitter. Please find all of the iTricks stories on Twitter at iTricks. And until next time, bang a gong.
iTricks.com.